detective. Thrill me.
Thanks for joining us again. A listener pick this week. Matt B., one of our friends of the show, good friend of the show, contacted us and mentioned this film as a potential cover. It's not in our normal wheelhouse, Jared. Is that a fair assessment of it?
I would say it is, but maybe not necessarily something we would cover.
Well, it's not. To me, it doesn't quite fit action. Doesn't quite. Oh, we'd watch. Yes, yeah, definitely. But it's not action or horror, so to speak.
Yeah, it doesn't fit neatly into
those genres.
But it does have tinges of the horror stuff to it.
Definitely. That's not. It's 1989's The Burbs. But before we get there, Jared, let's do a quick run through of what we've been watching. I watched the third episode of Murder at the End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
Still good. Although there's a sort of a reveal at the end where I was kind of like, is this where we're going?
That seems to be the theme on Disney Plus, isn't it? That's what happened with Goosebumps.
Yeah,
maybe like, not three episodes in, but
no, it's not bad, but it's just kind of like, if this is where we're kind of settling things, I'm concerned that this is what we're talking about. And I know that it's, you know, it's all about tech and stuff like that, but still, I was a bit kind of like, ooh. He's hoping it's not really a key player in the whole thing. But still interesting and still well done. I watched Ticks on Amazon Prime.
How'd you find that?
Shit ass.
Look, Amy Dolan's.
Yeah, I love. But she's not even that. I noticed that she's like on the cover and all this sort of shit.
Mm.
But she's really not in it that much.
Yeah, yeah. That's what happened in the 90s. You were a B-movie player, but you could still get on the front.
Yeah, I know. It was
weird. To sell some.
So we also had the guy from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air who played Cult.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't good.
In a
role outside of the normal scope.
Okay.
Look, it was one of those kind of B-grade animal sort of movies, you know, run amok kind of thing in the forest. Nah, it was pretty average. But I suggest you'll...
I mean, everything you've said says I should watch it.
You will not heed my warning and you'll be on it as soon as possible.
Of course I will. Of course I will.
I watched all three episodes of the documentary on Netflix, Escaping Twin Flames, which is about this group that sort of said that you could find your soulmate. They were called the Twin Flame, and then they started charging you $3,000. And next thing you know... Oh, we can find your soulmate for you.
Well, I might have got a couple of emails from these people.
Yeah, don't respond.
Yeah, yeah, good.
And then we can find your soulmate, and then when it doesn't work, oh, that wasn't your soulmate, it's someone else.
Yeah, we were close, then, but it'll cost you double next time.
By the way, cut your family off.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, it was really interesting, but it was very frustrating, Jared, because these guys are using the exact same manipulation tools that fucking Scientology and Jonestown and Branch Davidians and Nexium have all used.
Yeah.
And we are in a period of time where we can see all this.
Yeah, but there's a reason this stuff still works.
I know. And it's like they're looking for vulnerable people.
There's a reason it's worked for a long time and will continue to work.
Yeah. It's vulnerable people looking for somewhere to be.
I mean, if you got caught up in Nexium, I mean, we're talking about Alison Mackey. She's in the industry. She's had the opportunity to talk to people who've made documentaries like this, Adam, but she still got caught up.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason it still works.
It's about vulnerability.
Yes,
but it's very frustrating to watch.
It is frustrating to watch.
These people tell you about it, you're just like, holy shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Come on. How did we get here?
Well, they say, what I find is, They always start off with something and you're like, well, I can see how you kind of went to that, the self-help or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they say one thing where you're just like, that's where you walk out. But they didn't.
But you don't, yeah. It's a choice there.
It's almost always the same thing. There's always this one thing where they say, oh, well, it sounded great.
What I love though, Jared, is these fucking dickheads who are running this stuff, they've always tried it before.
Yeah.
Like, they've always got this history of having trotting this bullshit out somewhere else and it didn't take.
They're always like, they're like the monorail guy in The Simpsons. They've always left a city in fucking, you know, with a monorail in ruin behind them.
Yeah. To kick off another one somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this guy was exactly the same. He'd had these repeated efforts of the same bullshit. And Keith Raniere was exactly the same with Nexium. He tried this crap elsewhere.
Yep.
But, I mean, again, when someone tells me that they're the fucking... They know everything? I immediately go, no, you don't.
No, no, I don't think anyone does, really.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do, too? But then I'm also... when I stop paying my fucking $400 a month, are you going to come round and get it from me? Because come on.
But Adam, I'm also a simple-minded person, so when they box me into a corner with, you know, they start talking me into a corner, maybe I do it. I don't know.
I like
I just haven't run into that
Jared,
person yet.
I like my money too much, okay?
Well, not you.
You know what I mean? I like my cabbage.
Yeah,
so if someone starts asking me for $3,000 to do a course to become coach.
I ask you for $5 and you tell me to piss off, so I can't imagine what's
I say, listen, I'll hook you up next time, mate. Not right now, though. I'm skid.
Yeah.
I'm skid. But look, it is an interesting doco. I will say that. It is interesting. And you can see how people get caught up in it. And these guys push it to a fucking absolute nth degree.
Yeah.
There's some really scary shit at the end.
So the thing about the docos is you're getting, you know,
the worst.
A couple of years crammed into 90 minutes or whatever. So when we say there's that one thing that turns you off, they've fucking worked on this person for months or years and found the in. And then they're also not talking to the people generally in these docos. They're not talking to the fucking, you know, they're talking to the one that said, yeah, I'm in. They're not talking to the fucking other nine that said,
nah.
Yeah, when they said that, I walked out of the room.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
When they asked for my credit card details, I told them to piss off. Yeah. Like
Catherine Oxenberg's mother, who in Nexium documentary explained, she was a fucking lunatic. I thought, you're on to it, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's always someone that smells the bullshit. But yeah. We talk to the people that got caught up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They do some pretty scary shit at the end involving gender, which was fucking horrendous. Like, I remember just sitting there watching it going, oh my God, like this is where we really have lost the plot. The last thing I just wanted to throw this in. It's not a watchable, but Ray, one of our listeners, threw this at me with regards to the Sylvester Stallone documentary, and it's the podcast episode with his daughters talking to him.
Yep,
and it was really good.
Yep,
they actually fucking they didn't sort of beat around the bush with the bloke. No. They kind of pushed him pretty hard. Well, about
you
know, his,
sometimes you need family to say, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing?
No, look, in a way, there was some puff, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Christ, he's their father.
Yeah.
But they didn't shy away from talking about his parents.
Yeah.
Which that, the documentary really did sort of say that he clearly had a very difficult relationship with his parents. Like,
yeah, and his dad has been danced around, even in the series with his daughters.
Yeah.
Which I now have access to for another 12 months.
Is there another season
another
of that?
That's another
what
story.
What are we going
we'll
up
touch
the
on that briefly.
Get pissed and watch that again.
But as I, you know, as I said, I was storming out of Paramount Plus, but
yeah,
I've got another year to look into whether there's another season.
I may have to take it, but I don't have to like it.
There's a story to this. I'll get into it. But yeah, they touched on it then. And it's been touched on in other places too. Frank, funnily enough, mentions it a few times.
Yeah.
When Sly doesn't.
Yeah, and it's clear that the father was very, very difficult.
Tough. Man. Yeah, yeah.
And so his daughters actually do a pretty good job of sort of peeling back a little bit of the layers and actually sort of pressing him a little bit harder. Not too hard. I mean, it's not like they're going, come on, tell us about it.
Yeah.
But they...
Come on, fuckstick.
Okay, your dad's a prick. Talk about it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But they do a pretty good job, I think, of not making it kind of like just a sort of, let's see, what a great documentary, let's just move on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it was a decent episode. What about yourself?
Right, okay. I've got a couple of things.
Oh, yeah.
I started on Loki season 2 because I'm going to go see the Marvels this weekend. Oh. I'm going to contribute $10 to the box office. That might be not much further than that. I really liked Loki season 1. So far, season 2 has been okay. The stuff that I have liked has been stuff that was good in season 1, like Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson together. They added Ki-Hee Kwan.
Yeah.
And he's pretty good too. But the issue I found with the early episodes is we're far too concerned about all the time travel and how it's happening. Whereas in the first season, that was important and was crucial to the story, but was easily explained and was very much secondary to the drama towards the characters. Early on in the first episode, we get this whole drama about how this is going to impact Loki, and I just couldn't find myself caring about that. But the other stuff is still all right. I'm halfway through because it's a 6-episode season. I'm at the end of episode 3.
Oh, okay, so there's shorter seasons.
Shorter season, but the issue, the big issue for me so far is, so we had Jonathan Majors, right? Obviously, there's some issues with him that he is currently in court over. I believe it's today that he's going to court over the issues. But so far, we've seen 3 variations of the character that he's going to play in Marvel. The first one was the last 15 minutes of Loki season 1 and was fucking brilliant. Like, honestly, all he did was stand there and talk for 15 minutes or so, and it was fucking fantastic. And I would have watched that for hours on end. He's came back in Ant-Man 3 as a different variant of the same character, which is part of what Loki season 1 set up.
Yep.
Was pretty average. The movie was pretty average. Loki season 2 has him as a third variant of this character. And I just don't see the same brilliant actor that I've seen in other parts.
Was he a bit?
It's just, I don't know. I just don't know whether the story's not so great or whether the acting choices aren't so great. But I've seen him in other things, obviously. You know, Creed 3. I didn't think Creed 3. I think out of the Creed movies, Creed 3 was the weakest. But I think he was very good in parts of Creed 3.
Mm.
I just don't know what's going on. And I don't know how much of that is, are they preparing to not have him in much more if things go if things go badly in the court case. So
yeah.
So far not so good. It's not bad. I don't mind Loki season 2, but it's not on par with season 1 so far through 3 episodes. I've heard it gets better down to the back end.
Yep.
But then obviously the Marvels has had its issues. From what I can see, not all of that. I mean, I would love to say not all of that is because it's a female-fronted thing. But I it saddens me to say that I think that is part of the issue with some of the fans.
Yeah.
That's a really...
Which is really it's shit. Just,
I mean, if that's why you're not watching the movie, you got to fucking have a good hard look at yourself, really. But anyway... So I'll report back on that next episode because I will have finished that season and seen the Marvels by that point.
Okay.
I watched the Milli Vanilli doco, which you obviously mentioned. Now, I've got to take you to task, Adam, because you said, as I mentioned, you've said some silly things on this podcast, and I'm going to go on a technicality.
Yeah, I was half right.
You said they could actually sing.
Okay, I meant fab. The other bloke, you don't even actually hear him sing, do you?
I've heard him. I watched a clip on YouTube.
Right. Because they don't really have him in the doco. We don't have him.
No, they don't put it on there. And he is horrendous.
Oh, God.
He was, he's the one that has now passed on and had the substance abuse issues.
It would seem that he was a bit of the problem.
I don't want to kick the man, but he wasn't a singer.
No.
As you said, fab. And after watching the doco, I watched a couple of YouTube clips. There's actually a couple where he sings with the guy that sang on the first track.
Yeah.
And they sound pretty good together.
Yeah.
But Rob could not sing. And Fab was a singer who probably needed... Well, he wasn't going to get famous for his singing.
He wouldn't have been honed at all either.
Looking at pop stars, he was exactly what you've seen further on in the 90s. He had a look and could sing a bit, but they didn't use that. Rob couldn't sing.
I mean, look, you're getting hired because you look good in 3-quarter length fucking skinnies,
And they kept doing that jumping kind of high fives kind of business.
Did you also the dancing where they were kind of like swaying from side to side?
So yeah, I'm gonna say you need your head read for saying they could sing.
Look, I deserve a kick in the ass.
And I'm gonna play you a video of Rob singing on YouTube later on just to kind of rub it in.
Yeah, and you know what? Rob seemed to be the problem. He got too big for his fucking boots.
He was the one who told Paul McCartney later.
Fucking jog on, mate.
Paul McCartney says, "I'd love to say congratulations," and Rob says, "Tell him to come back later." If Paul McCartney says congratulations, you say, "Yeah, yeah, fuck, we got a seat right here in the VIP section for
take
you."
Take a seat, we get you a drink, and talk to us.
Would you like a bowl of Coke? Should we cancel plans for tomorrow so we can kick on a fucking 72-hour bender with you, Mr. McCartney?
What do you think, McCartney? Oh yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
You know what though? The thing that he's going in magazines. This was Rob.
Yeah.
And saying.
Our music is more complex than the Beatles.
As I said to you, aim a bit lower.
Yeah.
Like not at the fucking greatest band
history. That's right.
Let's get down a touch lower, okay?
Yeah.
Before you start pushing up there, let's go down.
Pull back on that. But it was actually a really good watch. But the thing was, it got those moments out of Fab because he's here to tell you.
Yes.
This is what it felt like to be told you're not going to sing. But to say, am I going to knock back fame and fortune?
Yes.
And no, I'm not.
And he
says a couple of times, I said, I wanted to sing. Rob wanted to sing. I think they wisely held back on showing Rob singing in the doco because that would have ruined
the illusion.
Yeah.
Imagine being the producer like, what?
Yeah. You want to sing? But I think it was awesome to explore Frank Farian and the fact that, not only had he done it before, but he did it after.
I know.
With the real Milli Vanilli. He pulls out the real Milli Vanilli and he's pulling the same shit. There's someone in there that's not singing.
Frank, stop. But also, you summed it up. That prick took no fucking heat.
No. He had a small press conference and said, "These are the real singers. See you later."
Yeah.
And left Rob and Fab to fucking sit there and... I mean, that the thing for me was that press conference showed what's wrong with the media sometimes.
Yeah.
Like there was that English bloke that kept on yelling.
They were absolutely livid.
Yeah, how dare you? How dare you do this?
What the fuck are you on about?
Mate, why aren't you talking to the other people? And they give the guy an answer. It was like sensationalism at its best. They give the guy an answer, but he fucking screams over the top of him with some bullshit that they've just answered. Yeah. It's like, mate.
And look,
you're just here so you can be on the TV screaming out your answer.
Milli Vanilli, okay, they weren't singing, right? But one guy summed it up. Who the fuck were they hurting?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think, look. So you churned out your $15 for their album?
I think
I said
this.
And you feel like the guys on the front cover, it's a fraud? But did you like the music or not?
I think I said this to you last week. The people that signed up for the fan club and shit like that, maybe they feel a little bit.
But who would?
Well, I'm not going to say it too loud, but I've been listening to Blame It on the Rain this week. Still a banger, just quietly.
Oh, yeah. Fucking hell. And, Diane Warren's like, I had this. Sounds a bit like
Diane,
that.
You've got 100 songs where you say, I had this, and it just happens to go number one. Oh, look at that. I fucking slipped and fell into number one this week. But
I farted. It's a number one.
Yeah, I farted and it went top 10. Sorry, I couldn't give you a number one. But the thing is, when you fucking sit and listen to the guy, especially seeing Fab sitting there for the whole doco and fucking giving it... He seems like a decent bloke.
Yeah.
So if you're a decent person and you sit down and have a conversation with the guy, or you listen to him in a reasonable interview where someone's not sitting there going, "Brilliant. How dare you?"
Yeah.
You come to the conclusion that, oh, well, I was duped, but the music's still all right. Yeah. I'll still fucking listen to the CD.
And at the end of the day...
If you loved it that much, you're still listening to it.
As you pointed out, why would you turn down fame and fortune? As far as you're concerned, no one's going to find out about this.
Well, there's a million... you can't put a figure on it. The amount of people in the world who would want to do something like this, it's the same as someone saying, oh, we'll give you an acting job, and the person signing the contract, and then them saying, oh, well, you're still going to make multi-millions, but you're only going to be a fucking silhouette on the screen.
Hmm.
But you're going to get super famous for doing that shit.
Well, okay. I'll still take it. Like, the way that they put it is that they fucking, you know, they were doing these shows. I can't see how they were seeing it.
I cannot see how anybody was fucking not cluing in on it.
They were doing these shows. They were doing these shows and they were dancing and whatever. And someone says, "We're going to sign you." You say, "Fucking awesome." You go and sit down at the meeting. There's not many people that would not take the first offer of fame and fortune and say, "Oh, hang on a minute. We're going to hold up for the person that says we're going to sing on the album." Because... again, I don't want to kick the guy, but hearing Rob sing, that offer's not coming.
They were not great enough, good enough singers to get that offer.
Yeah.
So suddenly the offer on the table is you will be our face.
Yeah. And I believe...
But others will be the behind-the-scenes stuff. I take it.
The story about the contract only came from Fab and Frank Farian's assistant.
Yeah.
I believe Fab when he says, "We signed the contract without reading anything, because we were fucking two naive idiots."
Mate, when was the last time you read the terms and conditions on anything?
Well, fuck me. Every time I open the PlayStation and buy a new game, I fucking scroll through 17 pages and say, accept.
Didn't read a fucking word of it.
Exactly.
So I don't know what you've done to me.
Correct.
You've probably fucking bugged me house.
Exactly. So... what he says to me is believable. They were naive artists.
Of course.
And the assistant says, "Oh, no, no, they knew everything." No. I don't think they did. I think they signed the contract, then they knew everything, and they were just like, "Well, fuck, this is on offer."
Well, we can't go back, can we?
Yeah, yeah.
We've just...
And as you said, the problem started when Rob started saying...
Fucking gobbled up in 5 minutes. He wasn't seeing
that the Beatles were, you know, were on the hammer.
Do you think Paul McCartney was like,
"I'm not going to sit down. I'm not going to take your congratulations because we're rivals."
Yeah, yeah. You can sing, I can't.
Milli Vanilli v Beatles was the looming.
As I said to you, give them 2 more years and they would have been out of the business because the music was poop. Like it would have just timed out. It didn't have legs.
I mean, my playlist this week would suggest you are incorrect.
No, it didn't have legs.
No, funnily enough, I listened to a few of their songs. Vanilli? I think you're right.
Because they were a fraud. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But I'm still, look, I'm still bumping, blaming on the rain.
Oh, yeah.
I'm what still about, going to.
What's the one, the soft one they did?
Girl, I'm going to.
Girl, I'm going to miss you.
That one was cool.
Why? I should say that sounds a bit more like Rob.
Yeah. You know what I love about "Blame It on the Rain" though? You listen to it, and you know what Diane's talking about. It's fucking nonsensical bullshit.
Yeah,
got to blame it on something. You left me. I got to blame it on something, so I got to blame it on the rain.
But that's what happens when you write fucking 500 songs. You don't know what the hell you just ripped out.
I mean, Diane Warren was fucking ChatGPT for songwriting. Before that existed.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, look, it was a good doco.
Yeah,
it was made by MTV, so I was fucking very, very cautious when that came up. I was like, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah, it's not bad. And you can see, you know, so, as I said, they dance around certain things, but it's an interesting little look at the story. The biggest part of it that I fucking, my recollection was they had the concert where it started skipping.
Yeah, they got
and that was it. That was where they got discovered.
Obviously not.
They went for a fucking year or two. They went another fucking 6 months to a year after that before the Grammys.
Look, that guy's got Tourette's. That's fucking... How do you wipe that off?
Oh, man.
Look, sorry about that. Rob recently got Tourette's syndrome, so fuck, he's...
But that was the part that you mentioned that was quite funny when that bloke's saying, we're rehearsing our asses off. And we're talking about when the singer's coming.
We're rehearsing our asses.
They don't. Oh, okay.
They rehearse at night. He said they come back at night. The guy's like, "What?"
Yeah. But yeah, good watch on Paramount, so I can watch it again.
Oh, good, good.
Do you want me to tell you the story about the Paramount?
Oh yeah, tell me the story about fucking Paramount. Because I told you I was to upset. Leave it alone.
I was upset. You told me no, leave it, leave it. I don't know why you told me that.
Because finally there might enough. Be something like Pulse King's still on.
Yeah. But anyway, so I knew the deadline was looming for the next payment.
Yeah.
And then I forgot to do anything about that. Then in my email I saw Paramount could not take your payment for this. And I was like, oh, good. I keep a certain amount on my credit card just so, you know, larger payments can't be taken out or whatever. So I said, fuck, that's a reminder. I've jumped onto Paramount. I've cancelled my membership. I put in the reasons for cancellation. Price is too high. I hammered that button. Price is too high. But then, so I've deactivated. The next day, thinking that I'm in the clear here, I fucking put room on my credit card for something else.
They took the money from
Paramount. Paramount's taking the money. So I find out, you deactivated your account, but you've got access for another 12 months. Oh, I said, oh, fuck. So I went to Paramount support and I was about to fire off a nastily worded email. Then I thought, I'll just have a quick scan through the catalogue again. So I quickly scanned the catalogue and thought, I can fire up or I can quietly accept this for 12 months before I fire up. And then I decided to quietly accept it and move on.
I like the fact that you jammed home. It's fucking prices are too high.
Yeah.
And then they took
I jammed home that the prices are too high and they took that high price not 24 hours later.
Paid it.
You had
the shits about the price hike.
I had the shits. I had the shits, but then I reconsidered.
You may as well just watch everything on there, I reckon.
Well, that's right. I thought I've made my way through a portion of the catalogue, so I'll just continue.
May as well go the whole way.
But, continuing on, I watched Puppet Master.
No.
Me and my friend Charles Band got reacquainted again.
Oh, but that's one of the better ones, isn't it?
It was okay. It actually had small portions of really excellent stop-motion effects. Used that for very briefly. There's about three or four sequences where you see they've done stop motion and it's very good stop motion, but then they cut to another shot where it's clearly just a hand in a puppet.
This is gross.
So,
well, your money doesn't go that far, unfortunately.
Money too tight to mention.
Money is too tight to mention on a Charles Band picture.
But I think there was enough there to say, well, you know, if I watch the other ones, which are all on Tubi, you'll probably get a reasonable amount of it. I think they're on both.
Oh, good. Oh,
I can't confirm that, Adam. I don't.
Well, how would you know?
I'm currently residing in America. We're not in the same room right now, so I couldn't tell you. But anyway.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? That's great.
What's in the background there? Looks like you're in another country to me. Yeah, that was all right. I then jumped on to... So I mentioned to you not long ago that I listened to some of Shirley Jackson's short stories.
Mm.
I found on YouTube, easily accessible, the 20-minute version of The Lottery.
Oh, yeah?
A short film that had... I believe it was made in the 60s. From what I know, it was sort of sold as an educational piece to schools and stuff to go along with the short story.
Yeah.
And there's something about the short story that I just love. It's that kind of small town, but everything looks normal on the surface, but under the surface, something that I still think is very relatable today and not just America, but a lot of places. So I watched that and it was excellent. It was really, really good. Captures the short story really well. Has a couple of pieces that it's not a horrific kind of story except for some of the actions that are being taken. It's not necessarily a scary story and whatever, but yeah, the impact on the short film was fucking excellent. I thought they did a really great job. So I went from that to there was a TV movie made in the 90s that had Kerry Russell just before she hit on Felicity. Mm. This other fella, I can't remember his name, but I believe he was an MTV personality that was in the lead role of the movie. And it's kind of like it's almost like a side piece because it takes the concept of the short story. And if you know the short story, it's still kind of worthwhile looking at because it sees it from a different point of view rather than being in the small town to someone coming into the small town because their relative was from there.
Mm.
It was actually kind of, I quite liked it. Not a great movie, but it was a nice little sort of companion piece that explored a few different themes from it. I'm not going to go too deep into it because I know it's a famous story. People probably know it, but if you don't want to spoil it or anything like that. Sure. But the movie sort of takes a different approach to
the same thing, takes a different approach to the lottery. It was very difficult. Well, it's seemingly difficult to track down. Again, popped up on YouTube somewhere, right. So hopefully it's still up there. But I then moved on to a Christmas movie, Adam, the first Christmas movie of the season. Disney had put a couple of fresh originals up for the 2023 season.
Is there one? It's not the one with Buddy Ludacris in it?
It is. Ah. It is. What Dashing Through the Snow.
What was that like?
Ludacris and Lil Ray Howery. It was all right.
Yeah.
It was okay. It's probably better than your... I mean, Disney's going to spend a little more time and money than Lifetime. Yeah. But not much.
No.
So it's
probably... Well, Disney's going to have like a cascading, you know, here's a couple of high profile projects. Yeah. Then we're going to go a little lower. Then we're going to get down into the fucking Disney Channel shit.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the Disney Channel doesn't really exist anymore. Disney Channel is now...
Yeah, Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. So there's one on there called the Naughty Nine, which sounds like a good concept of these kids that are on the naughty list that plan a heist on the North Pole.
Yeah.
Sounds like a really cool idea. I looked at the trailer. It looks like the cheaper one than this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got a few names in this one. So I didn't mind it. It's middle tier fare. It's the same old stuff you expect from Christmas. Oh, someone that doesn't believe in Santa. Yeah, blah, blah, yeah. Here he is. My daughter turned around and said, that was one of my favourite Christmas movies that I've watched. Thinking, fucking hell, we better watch a few more Christmas movies. But yeah, it was okay. And the last one I watched was on Shudder. It's called Ruin Me.
Okay.
Really cool concept about a group going on one of those slasher weekends.
Yes. I saw that on there. It was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like...
I realised I was on Shudder and I'd obviously fucking accidentally end up on
switched off.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure they've charged me for this year. Maybe it was the $25 rule. Maybe they dropped their price.
I have not seen them take that money out in fucking 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. They're covert on Shudder. Yeah, they're covert. They do it under the cover of darkness so I don't blow up.
They do it on
judging.
A Sunday night or something when I know no, I'm not going to bother to check.
Yeah, yeah. It was okay. I think the idea was far better than the execution. It was another one where you can see who it is a mile off. But I liked the idea that it was just, you know, those things that we don't necessarily have so much here at the moment, but in the States are starting to pop up around, you know, you go into a slasher movie for a weekend and it's essentially escape room type thing and kind of escape room mixed with Halloween Horror Nights type of stuff where you go do a, you're in a slasher and people get killed, quote unquote. Like, I thought the idea was good. It started to drop away a little bit, and I think it was trying to be a little more clever than it actually is.
Okay.
But I appreciate appreciate that they went for something like this and did something a little different with it. But yeah, I wouldn't say rush out and see it.
Okay.
And that was it.
All right. Just a bit of quick news, Jared. I think this has obviously been out long enough. But I thought we'd quickly discuss it, is the firing of Melissa Barrera for Scream 7.
Yep.
And then Jenna Ortega basically also not available. I don't know if – I think people are putting two and two together there and saying that she jumped in support.
Yeah.
Although I think that the line has been that it's not going to line up with –
yeah.
Her current filming schedule.
I think what happened was Melissa Barrera was locked in to the contract, whereas Jenna Ortega wasn't.
Yeah.
And this perhaps was a reason to say, well, I'm not going to be.
Yeah. Okay. It's an interesting one. Obviously, she made some comments.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it this way. She has the right, under freedom of speech, to say whatever she likes and have an opinion on whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no judgment on any of that. But I think the fans also need to realise that Spyglass and Paramount have every right to disagree with that opinion. Yeah. And have their own opinion, that is, we don't support this.
Yep.
So I think you've got to look at it that both ways. They both put their opinions out and they don't come together.
Yeah.
That's the end of the story, really.
Yep.
So we can't be saying that, you know, in my opinion, my personal opinion, you can't be saying that she's been dudded.
Yeah.
Because she got an opportunity to give her opinion. They gave theirs.
Correct.
And it's unfortunately they hold the the contract card and say, well, we don't want you anymore.
Yep.
So, you know.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, because I thought she was really, really good in number six.
I thought six was
sort of down on her in five. I kind of thought, this hasn't worked. But six, she really kind of stepped up the game. And
yep.
And I think it's disappointing we're losing that.
Yep.
But I also see it as a potential chance to perhaps lure Neve Campbell back and perhaps close that storyline totally.
Yeah. The issue I see with that is, are they going to try to stay on the same timeline and then fuck it up because they rush that?
Yeah.
If they do, I don't want that. The thing for me with this, Adam, is, we hold personal beliefs and whatever. Actors have obviously a massive profile to then mix that up with their standard Instagram photos of, hey, here's me on a fucking Sunday at a cafe with my dog, whatever. But everyone's held to these standards, right? Like, even now that she's been fired from this job, she's still in a privileged position. I know you and I have both worked in roles where in our contract, it fucking states that we're required to be apolitical. You know, I worked in a public service role where it was required to be, you know, you can't fucking go and put these things out. You know, you are entitled to your belief and who you vote for, but given the work that we do, you can't do this. She doesn't do the same work. And as, you know, as with us, she's entitled to her beliefs. But when you start putting that out to everybody, it does become a problem for your employer to deal with sometimes. I don't know what she said. I'm not going to pretend I'm smart enough to know the intricacies of the fucking political situation in the Middle East.
Absolutely not.
But to me, I don't know. There's a level where I say you're still an employee and there's still a level of professionalism that you have to hold and a level of accountability that you have for that. I don't know. But there's people saying it's unfair that she's been fired.
See, this is the thing. I haven't heard her saying that she's upset.
I don't know what she said. I haven't looked into what she said.
No, but she might have been prepared to accept the consequences of this.
She has basically said, from what I read, that she still firmly holds these beliefs and that silence is not an option for her.
So, you know what? She's taken the consequence.
Yeah.
Accepted it.
Yep.
It seems like the fans don't seem to be able to accept
it. No. And the thing is, silence is not an option for her because she's probably comfortable with the payroll that she's received from the previous movies.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a normal job like we were, if you go out and say something like that and then lose the job for it, well, you can't survive for another fucking 2 years on what you had saved up.
Yeah.
She can probably survive for forever on the residuals or whatever. So it's a little bit of a different situation in that regard. Again, I'm not commenting on all that, on what she said.
No.
But I think there's still this level where actors are, there's still a level of professionalism that is required by what you are contracted for. And I'm not commenting on whether what she said is right or wrong.
No.
But sometimes just blasting it out on social media is not the way to deal with it.
Yep. I think there's a bit there. But again, I don't feel like it's out.
And can you say to me that what she has done has bettered the situation in the Middle East at all?
No, probably not.
Fuck no.
But again.
it's highlighting something that everyone knows about. Yeah, you've got a profile, but everyone already knows about this, Melissa. So you've just lost yourself a job for something that everybody knows about. And possibly a lot of people already agree with and understand without you having said what you said.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of part where I look at it and say, yeah, this is where it comes under the whole thing about actors. How important is your voice actually? Sometimes it is very important, but on a situation like this, yeah, stand strong, stand firm on your beliefs, but blasting it out on social media and doing all that sort of stuff, I'm not sure you're actually having an impact on that situation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, but just very interesting, disappointing, because I feel like the series was going well.
Yeah, it was. And she was, those two as a pair had really kind of grabbed me in the last movie.
Yeah.
Whereas five, I was the same as you. I was like, oh, I wasn't sold on Melissa Barrera. Jenna Ortega was really good. the last one, I thought, yeah, the sister combination was excellent.
Yeah.
So it's disappointing. It's disappointing from that aspect.
But it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah. I kind of hope they shut it down.
Yeah.
I was happy to have Christopher Landon on as director.
Yeah. Retool it.
But and I come don't back think to the table. if they try to rush it out to the same time frame while all this is going on, I think that can only lead to
trouble.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Here's the trailer for 1989's The Burbs.
All Tom Hanks wanted was a quiet vacation at home.
This is what I need, Carol. I need this.
Welcome to Mayfield Place. A typical street in the burbs.
Morning, Walter!
Where nothing much ever happened.
Walter's dog just took a dump on Rumsfeld's lawn again.
Until the Klopex moved in.
Klopex?
Klopex.
Klopex.
No one goes in, no one comes out.
Neighbors from hell.
It was a nice place to live.
He said he thinks the Klopex are evil incarnate.
Well, you're much too smart to fall for that, aren't you, honey?
But now...
Carol!
You wouldn't want to visit there.
Ray, this is Walter.
No!
The Burbs.
I'm going over the fence, and I'm not coming back till I find a dead body.
Ray, do you want him to take your family, kidnap them, tear their livers out, and make some kind of satanic pate? We found Walter!
We got a real problem.
I hit the gas line, I'd run!
God, I love this street.
Tom Hanks.
I think we are overreacting.
No.
The Burbs. It's one hell of a neighborhood.
Hey, honey. I think we should move.
The Burbs from 1989, directed by Joe Dante, who directed The Howling. It's produced by Larry Bresner, who produced Ride Along, and Michael Fennell, who produced Small Soldiers. It was written by Dana Olsen, who wrote George of the Jungle. It stars Tom Hanks as Ray Peterson, Bruce Dern as Mark Rumsfeld, Carrie Fisher as Carol Peterson, Rick Dokuman as Art Weingartner, and Corey Feldman as Ricky Butler. The budget was $18 million, and the box office was $49 million worldwide. Now, the toy poodle Queenie that belongs to Walter in the film is played by the same dog that played Precious in The Silence of the Lambs.
Famous dog.
Very famous. All right. Again, big thanks to Matt for bringing this up for us. Well worth our time. I'm going to go first here. I kind of split this down the middle and went for a 2.5. I think there's some really interesting ideas here. There's a good cast, and some of it they kind of get right. But there's also a lack of humour. Like, there's no real belly laughs for me. It's kind of got a couple of lightly humorous moments, but it never quite gets comedic enough that the situation, I feel like, demands we need to get some more laughs. And there's one particular character that I just couldn't get. I couldn't stomach him. And after a while, I got sick to death of him, and I felt like he ruined parts of the film. I think we might be on different planes here with this, but I just could not take him at all. It's a good cast. It's got moments. But overall, it doesn't all come together, which kind of stymies a bit of the enjoyment of it. So I gave it 2.5.
Okay. I went for a 3. And I think probably comes down to the character that you mentioned. So I think, again, a good concept to go with, this whole idea of like, I mean, it's got elements of Rear Window, which we mentioned before, but it's like rather than one person's point of view, it's the community's point of view.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I like the way they play it from that angle, but it's like, what if it was kind of the Addams Family that was in the street or something similar? But it never really fully delivers on that promise. And then the ideas that it does go with, I think the ending kind of turn on a little. I think the ending kind of leans towards the stuff that didn't work more than what did work. Mm. The stuff that does work is the characters together. Tom Hanks, and I know you. I think you're referring to Art, who yes, I think was. I don't think he was belly laughs at really any point, but I think that he had a kind of he had me kind of smiling the whole way through. The lieutenant was my favorite. I could have done with a bit more of the lieutenant in there.
He was the best bit of
balance a bit more characters. Lieutenant with a bit of Art, but I think the family probably needed a touch more. Whether that be they're still silent, but we still see them doing a couple more things, or we have a couple more interactions whilst we're trying to delve into what they're doing. That said, I think the stuff that Joe Dante's kind of putting out there about suburbia and community and whatnot is quite funny in itself and plays all right. So, yeah, I think 3 was where I ended.
Okay, solid. All right, straight off the bat, I like that kind of horror vibe. And I kind of like the way they shoot the night scenes in, you know, everything's raining and, you know, you're seeing people digging shit up in the backyard. And
gothic always, sort of music.
This gothic the, sort of the music and feel. Church
organ and...
So it feels like horror. But then when we switch to the daytime, you're getting like apple pie, suburban America. Yeah. Everything's, the sun is out and everything's green and, you know. So I like the juxtaposition of those two elements. I think they work out really nicely.
Yep.
And I think that's a nice way to kind of, again, showcase the Klopeks are kind of weird, or they're weird within the community that they're in.
Yeah, yeah.
But yet...
they don't fit in.
But yet, early on, when you first meet the lieutenant, he's kind of a bit of a weird unit.
Yeah.
When he comes out to put his flag up and shit. And Hanks is not a weird unit, really, but...
But he kind of is.
Art kind of is too.
Yeah, they're both a little different in their own ways.
And then I mean, obviously the idea Corey of, Feldman across the road allegedly painting the house, but clearly just hanging around to watch what's going on.
Yeah. The idea of, you know, Hanks staying at home and just, you know, doing shit around his home was not kind of the thing then, right? Like it was you had a week off, you gotta go somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I mean I hate to say it, Adam, but the lieutenant, the opening of the lieutenant, sorry, the lieutenant immediately reminded me of you. What? You know, he steps in dog shit. He didn't go into the office after he did it, but he steps in dog shit and then he starts blowing up at people in his street. I'm like, this is just Adam, isn't it? Take the flag away.
Yeah, take the flag away and the fucking fatigues. Yeah, look, I thought the opening to him and the opening to some of that stuff where we meet the characters, you already get this fact that some of these guys are off kilter anyway.
Yeah, the opening is great. Even though they're
meant to be kind of the classic suburban families,
yeah.
They're a bit off.
They're all a bit off. They're all a bit different.
Walter's getting his dog to shit on fucking Lieutenant's Law.
Yeah.
And then those two are having a blue, and then Art comes into the house, and this was his best moment. He fucking takes the Kramer approach and just starts going into the fridge.
Yeah.
And he comes
yeah.
out with maple syrup, fucking ribs, and a pineapple. He just wanders back over to the table.
Yeah.
And I'm good like, stuff. That was kind of amusing, you know.
I actually thought they should have kept the old guy with the dog in a little longer as part of the crew because that dynamic was kind of funny. As you said, he's part of the group, but his dog's crapping on other people's lawns and stuff. There's a bit of comedic...
he's deliberately having a shit on his lawn and stuff.
Yeah.
I liked all that. I think that was a good way to start.
Yes. Yeah, I thought that was solid as well. In general, the cast was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Carrie Fisher was probably not in it enough.
Yeah.
But she
didn't really have much to do.
This was the period where he was comedian Tom Hanks, wasn't he?
Yes.
I mean, when was Tom Hanks ever a comedian?
This was fucking Bachelor Party. Yeah. This was around the Bachelor Party, Big, Joe versus a Volcano.
Yep. Did he ever do comedy? Dragnet? Or did he just end up as a comedian because he was in comedy movies?
I think he did do stand-up.
Tom, come on. I need to search some of that out.
He might have done stand-up. It would have been a while ago.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, I still laugh at him as the third Butabi brother on Saturday Night Live.
Of course you do.
But, look, Hanks is all right. Hanks is perfectly fine. Yeah. You know what you're getting. Yeah, he's good.
Yep.
He's His comedic stuff's...
Well, he can act, and he does have comedic timing and comedic...
And he's got that kind of low-key comedic element about him.
Yeah, yeah.
He then ramps it up when it, towards the end when he's, he's clearly losing his shit.
Few people blow up comedically like Tom Hanks,
yeah. So the, he's perfectly fine. Bruce Dern gets the money for me. He's good. He's really good because he skirts the line between two being just over the top enough, but also being able to kind of dial it back a little too.
Yeah.
That's where Art loses me. He's too much over the top. From everything, from his mannerisms and all that, and I'll get to that later.
But that's kind of to
he
me.
He talks too fast for me. He's
but
like,
to me, that's the purpose of it.
Yeah, I know.
He's
that's
supposed
what
to be ever present. He's ever present.
He's
constantly going. He's a pain
going, in the
ass.
Pushing
him
to
you know,
do
it. He's your buddy because he's next door.
Yeah, but
like, so even though he's not actually, he is a little annoying. He's
I
in that
seen,
role.
I could have seen that role actually played by Dan Aykroyd. Do you know what I mean?
I actually think. The guy that was in it was fine.
Oh, yeah. It's not like he was a bad actor. Yeah. It's just that I feel like the character just had no... He just really pushed things the wrong way for me.
Hmm.
And I think that comes down to, you know, personal taste. Perhaps.
See, I thought initially it was funny. He was quite funny. And he did get to the point of annoying, but I thought that was the point, right?
It was,
like that we got the lieutenant who's a fucking loose cannon. He's running around with guns and shit like that. We got Art, who's very, very, you know, he's chirpy, he's annoying. We got Corey Feldman, who's not in the age bracket. All
seems
these people that have no connection and no reason to be together other than we live in the same fucking cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Which to me worked with Art. I thought Art was kind of the gold standard of that he's constantly on the scene. And as I said, there was parts where I found him funny and parts where I didn't find him as funny, but I was kind of looking at him going, well, yeah, he's the through line. He's the one that's kind of, you know, when Hanks is better
well,
judgment
he's
is saying,
pushing, yeah, he's
yeah when Hanks
pushing.
Is better judgment saying there's nothing here, he's there going fucking, you know, chattering in the background. And
I think I might have liked the idea of him less to the execution of him.
Yeah.
Like he began to become real fucking grating after a while. And then
is that just because you're the lieutenant? You actually are the lieutenant?
But see, I needed more Dern. Like, we kept switching to Art, and I'm like, well, fuck, we've got the lieutenant up on the roof fucking carrying on like a penis and telling...
Yeah, see, this is it. This is the crux of the problem.
That's the
you're the lieutenant.
That's what we want to go
and
with.
The actual Art would piss you off.
He would. He'd probably shoot you. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Bruce Dern starts ramping
up. It's a fine line, right? And Bruce Dern, to me, is very funny through the whole movie as well.
Yeah.
But he's, again, less words, more kind of over the top, just loon sort
of. Yeah, lunatic sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they kind of, from the get-go, they show us the opening sequence is to Hanks coming out of his house.
Yeah.
To see the Klopex fucking basement sort of being lit up and everything like that. So you immediately get the sense that the Klopex are right out there, you know, that there's something going on and we know that these guys are going to look into it. So the plot line gives pretty much straight up front.
Yeah.
They just put it to you that this is what's going to happen. We're going to start looking into the Klopex.
Also really enjoyed how it set it up initially. That opening shot, it looks like miniatures.
Yeah, I think so.
They've got, I don't know how they went from the map to the miniatures, but it looked like at one point it switched to miniatures and then kind of does that over the top of the suburb. That looked really cool, and that's, you know, they started that gothic kind of feel with the music and the drab kind of colour scheme and whatever. But, yeah, you're right. I think the idea is set up really quickly that, hey, these guys are weird.
Yeah.
But then all we get to see for a long time is the weird behaviour
of everyone else. Everyone else involved.
Which is good. It's really good for a stretch.
Yeah. Some of this is where the horror stuff sort of came back in. The weird nightmare that Hanks has that involves
on the barbecue,
the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sort of thing. I thought that was cool. And again, it sort of touched on horror elements that I felt like we could have had more of, perhaps.
Yep.
Because I feel like that's where we were going. We were going towards horror elements.
Yep.
I think the nightmare was really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah. And it was quite well shot. Like, it looked really cool when he's on the barbecue and the kind of druid costumes and shit like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite good as well. I also like the garbage truck scene.
Yeah.
When fucking...
Oh, yeah. When they're pulling the garbage. They're all they're in the fucking garbage. Back of the garbage truck.
Yeah, and Dick Miller's kind of talking to his offsider, and the next thing you know, that bloke's dumping garbage on the ground.
What are you doing?
I'm helping you. I'm helping you. You told me to help.
And all three of them are in the fucking in garbage the truck.
That, I did get a good laugh out of that, especially when the lieutenant charges
he
in.
He fucking just rolls right straight in there. He just dives
jumps
in
right in there. That was also when the YouTube clip I saw of Corey Feldman and Dick... So there's a little clip of behind the scenes, and it's Corey Feldman. It's them standing around the garbage truck, and Corey Feldman's kind of – everyone else is ready. It looks like they're ready to start the scene, and Corey Feldman's kind of dancing. And Dick Miller goes, "Shut the fuck up, kid. We're ready to start acting here." Well, we're doing some acting here or something like that. And I couldn't stop laughing when I saw it. The clip only goes for like 10 seconds, but I fucking pissed myself laughing. I mean, I prefer my Corey Feldman when, he's introducing a band and, you know, he's halfway through a dance and then he tells everyone to stop and fucking chides the drummer for being offbeat or something like that and then turns around and fucking smashes his face into the microphone by accident. I mean, that's how I prefer my Corey Feldman.
Look, full disclosure, we've been fucking trading Corey Feldman videos.
I don't know if it's trading or just being traded too.
Luke seems to be fucking very intrigued by what Corey's currently up to.
And I'm happy for him to keep sending the clips through.
And whenever I get that video of him dancing fucking aggressively at the Howard Stern show.
Yeah, that one's a problem.
I still don't know what was
especially
happening
there. When...
He looks in crazy.
Well, in that whole video, he kind of comes in with an anti-drug message, but then I watch the entire video, including Howard Stern and his cronies, and I'm like, everything here seems to be fueled by drugs.
You're making an anti-drug message to a group who have just clearly snorted fucking lines in the toilet.
You're giving us an anti-drug message, then we see a number of, like, people in strange costumes coming out of the screen and gyrating and kind of, like... This can only be drugs, Howard.
It's not like you blokes are high on life.
Correct. But the last one I saw was actually, Justin Hawkins, the bloke from The Darkness, who now does a bunch of YouTube videos where he looks at... He did one not long ago where he watched a collection of the latest Corey Feldman things. And he couldn't stop laughing, and he came to the conclusion that it was performance art. It's a whole piece of performance art.
Clearly not. Like, in my opinion, there's just a no talent bloke who's fucking desperately trying to wring every minute speck out of that 15 minutes.
Seems like the Canberra show. Seems like Corey's playing the Canberra show, and he's got his back to the crowd, and the band's kind of introing him with his, and he starts kind of, you know, he starts dropping the shoulder to the beat, and then he's like, "Fuck, stop, everybody, stop!" And he starts fucking yelling at everyone, "We're gonna start it again." And Justin Hawkins was fucking, he was just pissing himself. God, this is. I mean, yeah, he's like, yeah, it's their fault.
And look, I think Corey's not really that great a musician, is he?
No. But,
why is he persisting? Go back to fucking acting.
Performance art.
No.
I'm sure he's going to come out on the David Letterman show and tell us I was making a doco for a year where I was pretending to be a shit musician.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I was pretending for a decade.
Yeah, I've got 10 years of fucking footage of me acting like an idiot. But Corey. Yeah,
Dick Miller was onto it from the start.
Yeah, Dick was onto it in 89.
I'm not interested in your fucking performance art. Shut the fuck up.
Although I believe the bloke who played Jason in Friday the 13th Part 4, so he was in the fucking ass, and that was 84.
So Corey's been doing this for a long time. He just didn't have microphones to bump into back then.
Oh, God.
See, the funny thing is Justin Hawkins, with the clip where he fucking smashes his teeth on the microphone, Justin Hawkins says, yeah, yeah, I've done that. But then Justin Hawkins has also freely admitted that he was high for a long time.
Yeah, I know, I know. Well, Corey, there's no fucking, no one's told me otherwise. No, Corey's not no. also high.
I think he is.
Okay, back to the film. But the moment, there's a particular scene that I'll talk about which I didn't particularly like, and I would have considered cutting it out. But within that scene, Bruce Dern dishes up the line, "What have you got in your cellar here, Klopek?"
Yeah.
And I was like, that's gold.
That's where Dern's at his face, stalking around the scene.
Yeah, he's wandering around going, maybe we should have a look downstairs, shall we?
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, there was a couple of lines. There was another one. I don't know why I found it so funny, but this was art, so maybe you didn't find it as funny, but... It was just a kind of random one where Hanks is on his balcony and Carrie Fisher comes out. Come out. And Carrie Fisher says, he can't come out until he resembles the man I married. And Art starts going, Carol, we don't have that kind of time.
And then they start going, please, let him out.
I don't know why I found that so funny. It was just a throwaway line, but it said so much about how they were acting. I thought that was very funny.
I get a laugh. For some reason, I got a fucking very big laugh out of when they're trying to break into the Klopek home through the back door. And he goes, give me a credit card. And he fucking starts pulling his wallet out, which is burned to shit after he after he got electrocuted. So Hanks pulls out a credit card and starts going, and Art goes, where'd you learn to do that? And he goes, I never learned to do this, yeah. And he snaps it off, snaps the fucking card in half. And then he's just like, he grabs a pot and goes, fucking window.
Yeah.
I thought that was piss funny for some reason.
Again, highlights that these guys are just being absolutely they're just kind of in over there. Yeah, very good. I think it was around a similar time, but when the dog finds the bone and it says, you know, he says, it came from over the fence. I actually found that to be at a part where, like, it's a really simple thing, but it seemed to be at a part where the development of the kind of story element of, or any evidence of the Klopeks being weirdos had kind of stalled.
Yeah.
So when we actually get that, I was like, oh, okay, well, we've got a reason to continue this on, which was running thin at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sort of liked nice where that was placed. Nice
way to sort of reinvigorate that stuff.
Yes.
And honestly, one of my biggest likes is actually the fact that I feel like once the Klopeks fuck off and they decide to take their adventurous group together to try and get in there, when the movie kind of comes alive a bit. Like, yeah, I was like, we should have done this half an hour ago.
Yes.
The whole fucking back end of the movie should have been 45 minutes of these ball sacks trying to fucking break into this house.
Yeah, in a way, I agree with that.
Like, and, the Klopeks aren't even there, but these fools are roaming. That would have, I think, made for much better comedy.
Yep.
It would
have
kind of upped the comedy ante.
Yep, agreed.
And I really like that kind of shit where, you know, Dern's up on the roof, dribbling on about the fucking Eagles in the Hen House or some shit all the time. And then, he's watching one group leave, and then he's got Corey Feldman chirping away, and him and his buddies are going, what's going on over there?
The funny thing for that part to me is that, like, you know, he keeps talking about how he's a veteran or whatever, but he's just sitting on top of his house, and Feldman just walks out and he's like, hey, it's not like there's anything covert about what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And then in that whole time, we've got them digging up the fucking basement, and we've got the Klopeks come back, and then Carrie Fisher comes back. Is it? No, Walter reappears.
Yeah.
You know, and we kind of join the dots to everything. And that period is where the movie's probably at its best. Mm. I think it actually starts to really find its range. And my final like is, it's a simple kind of twist that Hanks kind of says, we're the weirdos, the evil ones.
Yep.
These guys haven't done anything.
Yep.
But then we twist and they actually have. They killed the fucking Knapps and took their house.
Well, I like part of that. I liked Hanks blowing up and like, we're the fucking idiots. These guys did nothing, but we fucking
we basically just fucking conjured this hysteria amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was the real strength of the ending.
Yeah.
And I also got a laugh when he fucking flops into the ambulance. And
yeah, he just lays
face the down. Gurney, picks the gurney up and fucking throws it in the ambulance and then lays on himself.
Yeah, that's right. That was cool.
I think Carrie Fisher's there going, "You're all right." He doesn't turn around or anything. You just kind of hear him going, "Yeah, I'm fine."
Yeah, he's mumbling into the fucking
that,
gurney.
I found that very funny.
Yeah. That was all I had likes-wise.
Yep, same. Well, I mean, we probably mentioned a little bit about the sort of gothic vibe when they were trying to ramp up the Klopexes as the villains in the piece. I think that was, that's worth mentioning again, that it was, it kind of sets everything up, how that is played.
Yes.
Because it's not a lot, but it's enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, we get all those sequences of them digging in the yard and
well, I say it's enough. It's enough when it's done. I could probably, we'll probably go into that a little bit in the dislike.
Okay. I think we covered Art. Like, I was going to talk about Art more, but I just feel like he started to become too much for me.
Yeah, I was on the other end. I think, making the Kramer comparison is kind of funny.
It's kind of, it's kind
of
similar.
Because it's like Kramer if he was there the whole time and
exactly.
Not as funny and... But I actually thought, as I said earlier, I think that was purposeful, that he was supposed to be a bit of a laugh, but he was also supposed to start to be a little grating.
And he was getting, I guess, on Hanks's nerves.
Yeah,
and he was starting to push Hanks into stupid decisions.
Yes,
and
correct.
And all that sort of shit.
I mean, he had a big role in, there's that scene early on where he's fucking ramping up the hysteria, but then he says to Hanks, "You're a coward. Your kids are here. That was your chance." And you're fucking, Hanks is there going, I didn't blow it. I did not. And Art's there going, "Yes, you did. Your kids are here and they're watching and you fucking blew it." It's kind of like, that's him summed up, right, for the whole movie. Like, so but sometimes it works, sometimes it becomes a little grating, but I didn't feel like it got too far into
the... I think the biggest problem with the film, for me, is all of those interesting elements didn't quite connect up well enough.
Yeah, there's something missing.
Yeah,
you kind of feel like there's a little bit missing. And it's to me, it's like, I've spoken a few times on here about how I favour the classic kind of story arc. I need a, this happens and then this happens. And it feels like this one relies a lot on there's not necessarily anything pushing these people along, but they're pushing themselves along. Into the, these guys are weird. And that works, and I enjoy that for a lot of the movie, but there's parts where I'm like, we need something to continue pushing them along.
Mm.
From a plot perspective, we need the Klopex to do something else, or we need something to happen for this to continue. So, that was something that I mean, it's very much concerned with these fucking bozos looking into what's going on as a crew for long stretches. And as I said, that works and is the strength of the movie in some parts. In other parts, I was like, well, fuck, can we get another? And that's why I liked when the dog finds the bone. I'm like, well, here's a reason for them to continue this shit.
Yeah.
Like,
to still believe the Klopex.
Yeah, because there's a few points in the movie where it's like, you would be off it. You'd be off it.
Like, yeah, probably. And maybe that's why Art became annoying to me, because he kind of fills the gap. Somewhat.
Yes. Yeah.
He continues to kind of maintain the rage.
He's kind of chief in convincing them that this is going.
And that's usually at the expense of nothing else going on.
Yes.
Nothing else going on with the Klopex. You don't know much.
Yep.
But I feel like the biggest problem with it is it's got some humorous moments, but there's no belly laughs for me. And it's more a black comedy.
Yeah,
satire.
Definitely,
it's
definitely.
Not really a comedy.
I mean, I did have I had a few laughs through it, but definitely more in that realm of...
In the black comedy satire type of realm. And I feel like it's not always successful in that approach, because that takes certain things that we need to really get behind. And even though the whole suburbia and the whole sort of spying on your neighbours, and you're a normal human being who suddenly becomes an idiot because you just jump to a conclusion.
Yeah, it definitely dips into the highs and the lows.
Yeah, and it just kind of sometimes it gets to there and then it doesn't.
It doesn't make me laugh as much as if I was watching Frank Rabin for 80 minutes.
What does, though? What does? Although, correct. Seeing Liam Neeson as Frank Rabin might get
there. I cannot wait.
Honestly. Fucking hell.
So good.
Yeah. Best piece of casting in years. Far out. The leather jacket Corey's wearing.
Mm.
Holy shit.
I think he's still wearing it.
I think he is. I'm pretty sure I saw that thing in one of those videos we talked about.
The comeback king,
it's
perhaps?
The comeback king, shit. Sorry, that's a side note, but that is... Do yourself a favour and look that up.
Oh, Corey.
I mean, that was made like last year or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah.
How's the comeback? Like, I want some numbers on the comeback.
Well, funnily enough, I think the comeback king was what he was launching into when he stopped and chastised the band and told him to start again.
So you guys.
He makes a comeback mid song.
Comeback king. Yeah.
He says, oh, we're out. No, we're not. Let's start again. It's a comeback.
Right, my fucking career's over. Hang on. You guys start again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm with Justin Hawkins. Look, they're not to blame.
No. Yeah.
I think there are bigger issues here at stake. It's not them.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, but the leather jacket, it looks like it's been fucking bedazzled. Jesus Christ. That was 89, God. I guess. I mean, were we getting out of that kind of shit by then?
Well, I think Feldman was starting to drop off in popularity, so
that's
maybe the jacket
right.
was
no,
part of it.
I did
that's,
read something.
That's what happened. The jacket fucking ruined his career, Adam.
I read something that he'd just come off Dream a Little Dream. And I remember watching that movie in the fucking cinemas, Jared, and he dances like Michael Jackson on the bleachers in a sequence. He even has hair like Jacko, that stringy shit that's at the front.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a leather jacket. I'm going to find some pictures of this.
I'm confused because it sounds like you describing the comeback king.
Oh, yeah. Corey's
still got the
trapped
stringy
in 88
hair, and he still dances like Michael Jackson.
Far out. But it said that in the trivia that he'd just come off Dream a Little Dream. That's why he had long hair.
Okay.
And so they picked him based on that.
Yeah.
Because he thought he wasn't going to get the gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
Dick Miller still wasn't impressed.
Yeah, Dick Miller prefer he wasn't on the set.
Dick Miller treated Corey... Seemingly, based on 10 seconds of footage, Dick Miller treated Corey like, you know, Jim Carrey to his Tommy Lee Jones. Could have sanctioned his fucking buffoonery for 10 seconds or so.
But, yeah, that jacket is a fucking nightmare.
Okay, good.
You would not be caught dead in that. I'm serious.
How does it compare to your Hard Target jacket?
Oh, no, there's no comparison, mate, because the Hard Target jacket sort of...
Hard Target jacket.
...saved a lot of fucking kudos when
it's
I was on Halloween time. Yeah, it's tolerable. I just realised that I'll never wear it again.
That's what I'll swoop in and say, can I borrow that for a costume party that I've got coming on?
I saw
I'm
it.
I'm practising my
the
high kicks. I got a pair of Chuck Norris action jeans, so they look so tight that they're painted on, but I can still high kick in them. That was your mistake.
When I'm in them, I look like a pack of footy friends.
Yeah.
Holy shit. But. I realised that fucking jacket's not going to get worn again, is it? Holy shit. It cost me fucking $70. $70 US.
That's all right. That's good value. Yes.
Plus $30 postage.
It'll get worn again. Don't you worry. Don't you worry.
I should be wearing it every weekend.
I'll
theme
a party
sake.
Around that. If you tell me you're never going to wear that again, I'll fucking theme a 90s action hero party just so you can wear it again. I've got a Cameron Poe costume that's just ready to be dusted off.
Yeah, what?
Anytime.
It's a fucking lovely piece of kit. Though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
been lovingly crafted.
I mean, you appreciated the lovely denim jacket regardless. So you'd probably wear it more if it didn't have the Hard Target logo on it.
Well, it's got more play. I can walk around on a Saturday.
Correct.
In a double denim ensemble.
I mean, it's 2023, nearly 2024, but I can still wear a denim jacket. And still be as unattractive as ever.
I know I shouldn't. All right. Now, this is my last dislike because I didn't have a lot of dislikes because I felt like there were some bigger pieces there that didn't work. So they were dislikes, but they were kind of very hard to put your finger on exactly where we're going wrong here. But there's one particular scene that I just didn't like at all. And it's the scene where they actually go to the Klopex and introduce themselves.
Yep.
I just, apart from Bruce Dern, who's roaming around, you know, getting in people's faces and carrying on like an idiot, I felt like that was not necessary. I still feel like the Klopex should have been kind of the shadowy family that we knew very little about, or we found out briefly about the doctor or something, or one of them comes out and engages with the community early.
It's funny. I think it was necessary to a point. I think perhaps it was too long, though.
Yeah,
I think
you
do need to have, you know, if you're going with that kind of Rear Window, oh, this is what we've seen, there does need to be an element of, it's similar to Fright Night, right? Like, there does need to be an element of, oh, we interact.
Yeah, I know, but maybe we could have interacted outside the house. So that possibly makes that second half bit.
It could have been
trying
a little
to break in. We've got some more mysterious shit to uncover.
Yeah, it could have been a little less, but I think I disagree when you say it's unnecessary. I felt like it was very necessary that we have, here's an interaction with the characters, and whether it's long or short, I probably agree that it was maybe too long.
Because we could have interacted with the young guy when he comes out onto the front step. We didn't.
But there's got to be a, oh, here's what I've seen, and this fucking confirms what I believe, or, you know, with different characters in there, everyone's saying, oh, no, that everything's normal. They're just a little bit off or whatever. But then, you know, someone's saying, but hang on, this is...
Yeah, the toupee
is
the bit that comes back.
And I can tell you, before I watched this, it had been a long time since I'd watched The Burbs. And the one thing that I recalled was Sardine. So
what was the other bit he gave him?
There was pretzels
and sardines. That's right.
And then Hank starts fucking the coughing fit. So yeah, there's something to say that, okay, well, that scene was actually done reasonably well because that's the only thing I recalled from the. I mean, I could have recalled, not in great detail, but I could have told you basically what the young fella looked like because I remembered that scene from having not seen it. I reckon I was a teenager the last time I watched this.
No, I haven't. I couldn't tell you when I last saw it.
Yeah. So
most of it, basically it was pretty much fresh.
Yeah. I think there's an element
there was other ways maybe to get some of that.
There's part of me that says that scene was done quite well. There's part of me that says it was too long.
Because we could have spaced it out a little bit more.
Well, we could have had multiple interactions. Yeah. We could have had an interaction on the front step.
Yeah.
We could have
multiple interactions where we're getting a little bit more information. And we're spreading it across the 100 minutes of
I actually think that would have worked better because this really was the only scene where you see something other than, okay, they're outside digging and the garbage.
Yeah.
That says, we continue this. We keep pushing.
Yes.
We keep fucking, we break and enter.
Whereas we needed, I felt like, and it would have probably broken up some of the monotony where not much was going on.
Yeah, possibly.
So I felt like there was probably better ways to perhaps do that.
Yeah.
I appreciate what they were trying to do.
Yep.
But I feel like just a little bit more care around that. We could have made spaced the interactions out to give us a little bit more.
Mm.
And it would have still made that shit where they break in still highly amusing.
Yeah.
Although
I
still would have found that shit even funnier if we'd have got the entire crew breaking into the house.
Yeah.
And they're all roaming the house,
lieutenant,
carrying on like idiots and falling over things.
I mean, if he'd have jumped into the backyard and stepped into another pile of dog shit, I'd have been happy as
stitches.
I'd have been laughing as much as when I see Liam Neeson playing Frank.
Yeah, I know. I haven't even actually. It's just a concept now.
In my head. But I still just laugh every time I think about it.
That was all I had, dislikes wise.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else?
There was points where I thought the music was a little strange. Like, there was a point early on where the music was really quirky, but it was over the top and a little bit too much. I thought when it was the whole church organ stuff, that all kind of worked, but there was a few points around that in the suburbia stuff where I was like, what's going on with the music here? Probably a minor one. And the other one was the ending of... So in terms of the story, I quite enjoyed the doctor from the Clopex jumping in the ambulance and ending it that way. But after you've kind of gone to the extremes of, or gone to the lengths of essentially making the ending, Tom Hanks fucking screaming at everyone saying, we're the oddballs, we're the weirdos. Like, what are we doing? It felt like it undercut that a little.
It probably did, yeah. Because that was the message you were trying to deliver.
Yeah. So if you go in the black comedy kind of route, you probably leave it there. Or you go even further with him fucking firing up at art.
Or you could have done this, and I actually thought that was going to happen, was that we were going to get a little cheeky throwaway of the Clopex as they leave, where you realise, fuck, they might have actually done this.
Yeah.
But they overtly do that.
Yes.
So he gets in the back with Hanks. He threatens to kill him. Yep. Tells him to kill the Naps. They find the corpses in the boot. You know, like, it was so overt that it undercuts it.
Yeah.
Whereas if it had just been they're saying goodbye, they're leaving the neighborhood, and he says something or something where Hanks goes, fuck, you know, it twigs something that they found in the house or something, and there's the little final kind of slight tweak to it.
Yeah. It might have worked better. Yeah, I think so. But the way that they played it, it kind of seemed to undercut what you'd built up the whole movie. The fact that you're kind of keeping the Clopex so out of it and allowing these three dildos and their, you know, the little bit on the exterior to fucking build up this whole thing, that you then go and do that at the end kind of undercut it a little bit for me. Yeah.
The message, so to speak.
Correct.
It's just,
and, you know, that's really still is the strength of it. When you look at it at the end of it, it's like, well, you know, you get, as you do, you go and live in a place and you just, you know, you meet the people that are in a part of the suburb and some of them you look at and you say, well, shit, we connect with these people straight away. Some people you look at and you're like, oh, they're a little bit different. But then you build up this kind of community regardless of the differences, and then somebody comes into that and everyone that already knows it is kind of like having their communication lines and whatever, and these people are on the outside of it, and so the kind of narrative gets built up amongst the group that aren't talking to them.
Yeah.
That still is the best part of the movie for me. Like,
yes.
So,
and that bit kind of works well.
Yeah.
It's some of the other stuff that's kind of around it that doesn't kind of fully gel with it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's where I feel like it loses its points. Yeah. And I felt like I expected it to be funnier too. Like, for me, I'm looking at Tom Hanks and everything like that, and I'm thinking, look, this, you know, the 80s, late 80s sort of, you know, comedy, I felt like maybe we'd get a bit more of a belly laugh out of it.
Yeah.
But it's not really in that wheelhouse, is it? It's slightly different.
Yeah.
But, so do you have anything
else? Watch it again, though.
Yeah, it was good to see it again.
Yep.
Anything else?
No, that was it.
All right. That is The Burbs. Thank you very much to Matt for suggesting this. I hope you enjoy it, mate. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and Podomatic, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Send us an email at thrillme@iinet.net.au. We're on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia, Podomatic at thrillme.podomatic.com, and Instagram at thrillmepodcastau. Keep an eye on the Facebook page for details of our next movie. But until then, take it easy and we'll catch up with everyone later. Cheers.
Find the podcast at Podomatic or on iTunes. Don't forget to rate and review. Like us on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia, or contact us at thrillme, all one word, all lowercase, at iinet.net.au.